I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Gordon McFarland joins me now. He and Richard Beamish edited a marvelous book, The Sea Among Us, The Amazing Strait of Georgia. It sold well since its release in November and was recently shortlisted for the Roderick Haig Brown Regional Prize, which will be handed out the 25th of April at the BC Book Prizes. The book is a great resource about the Strait of Georgia, the 6,500 or so square kilometer body of water between Vancouver and the Vancouver Island and the mainland. It profiles its history, its landscape, the species in and around it, and looks to its future. In fact, the putting together of this book is a way of ensuring its future as a resource for teachers, students, and legislators. All author royalties will be donated to the Pacific Science Foundation. I'll ask Mr. McFarland about what's in this book and the experience of putting it together. Gordon McFarland spent 30 years as a researcher at the Pacific Biological Station in Nanaimo. He was a member and advisor to numerous international negotiating teams and participated in the development and conduct of a number of international research programs. He joins me from Nanaimo today. The book is from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Gordon McFarland. Mr. McFarland, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So the number of species in the Strait of Georgia, it just astonished me at that number. So for people listening, what sort of number are we looking at?
Well, in terms of species, there's invertebrate species and marine plants. There's somewhere around 4,000, 4,500. In terms of fish, I believe Dick Beamish has gone through and documented and added some new ones and had to remove a few that were actually not found there. But mm-hmm. I think the number for fish species is around 227. Marine mammals, there's 11 species. And then, of course, if you get into things like birds, there's numerous species of birds, I believe around 90, that live in and around or on and around the strait. So it's a biological or biologically incredibly active place.
Yeah, and as someone who I guess has spent their career studying it, obviously a bounty and a wonderment for those of you in the scientific field.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I started out looking at assessment and the dynamics of fish stocks basically for commercial purposes, mm-hmm. for trying to set quotas and develop management plans for the fishing industry, for the government to use in monitoring and managing the fishing industry. But it became pretty clear pretty early on that you couldn't just study the fish species. You couldn't just understand the biology of the species. You had to look at the biology of the species, but sort of look at it in relationship to between all the fish in there and all other components of the ecosystem. And that includes the physical components and things like decadal scale, climate variability, and now, of course, we know global warming.
Are there species that are unique to this area?
To the strait itself?
Yeah.
There are a few, I believe, that are found only in the strait. For example, in terms of invertebrates, the giant octopus, the mm-hmm. Pacific octopus, which is the biggest octopus in the world, is found in the strait and is unique to the strait. There are probably some small fish species that are not found elsewhere. I'm not sure exactly how many there would be, but there's definitely unique species in the strait, yes.
Is there a list of species that are at a high risk of being extinct at this point?
Well, I mean, you've certainly heard about some of the marine mammal species that there's mm-hmm. issues with. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, other than the killer whales in the strait, most of those mammals, the seals and sea lions and whatnot, have had tremendous rebound since hunting was stopped and culling of those species was stopped in the late 60s to early 70s, and they've rebounded to historical levels, basically. There are some fish species which have undergone tremendous declines over the years. Lingcod is a good example. It's a fishery that, you know, it supported a fishery in the 1930s of over 2,000 tons annually, and it was shut down in the early 1990s because the stocks were so low. Now, again, there's no commercial fishing for lingcod in the strait, but the there's a little bit, but not too much. The stocks there seem to be showing a bit of a turnaround in the last number of years because of that protection. Now, what happens is, of course, the conditions in the strait, the environmental conditions and climate conditions, change on a decadal scale. And when they're good, and if there's enough of the stock around, they can rebound. And we do see that, and we're seeing that with a number of those species. So although you're always, you know, I mean, the job of government and the job, we hope, of people is to ensure that these things are protected. And I think, for the most part, we're doing a pretty reasonable job. And most of these species, when we do see that there's some issues, the rules become stricter and the monitoring becomes a little stronger. And for the most part, we've been pretty lucky in that these species respond favorably to that type of action.
And you're seeing governments at, let's say, the provincial and the federal level, with the will to ensure that species survive in this part of the world?
Oh, I think so. I think Canada has been pretty good in terms of its promotion of protection of these species, and for the most part, the regulations in place are pretty good. The monitoring of many of the fisheries is the best in the world, and has been for many, many years. And, you know, there's always issues. No matter how good you are and how diligent you are, there's going to be some issues with some of the species and some of the stocks particularly. I mean, you don't have to look very far back to see some of the issues that have come up. The 2010 and 2009 sockeye, you know, went from the almost the lowest on record to the almost the highest on record in 1 year span. And, you know, we really can't explain some of those things still.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of work to be done, and there's still a lot of care to be taken when we're developing a lot of these strategies. But for the most part, you know, that's one of the reasons we wanted to put this book together, was to provide not only the government legislators and policymakers with information, which we provide them in a number of ways, but we really wanted to ensure that all this information was in one place, if you want to put it like that, one book, where other interested and concerned people could have that information so that they could, if I could put it like this, they could formulate the questions to put to the legislators to ensure that the strait is protected.
And have you found in your experience that governments are of any stripe ready to, say, invest in research and the sort?
It's, you know, governments have a lot of things they have to spend money on,
yeah,
and taxpayer dollars. And as a scientist, and I think you'll find this for most scientists, we would always like to see more dollars. There's never enough dollars going into research. But by the same token, when it's been needed, for the most part, some resources are certainly directed to the appropriate issues at the time.
So I guess one of the things that this book does, it puts in the, as you said already, that it puts in the hands of, say, people like me, regular citizens, the information that we need, and both you and Dr. Beamish have found that governments do listen to the people at times, especially when it comes to where their money is being spent.
Yeah, we believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's probably lots of people who don't believe that, but we believe that if if the public, a well-informed, concerned public, can bring a lot of pressure to bear on some of these issues and can ensure that, you know, if there's some things that they see that they think aren't what they want to see happening in the Strait, that they can bring a lot of pressure to bear on government to ensure that things change. And again, our reason for this is if we could provide the science in a clear and we hope entertaining way, but still comprehensive enough that everyone would be on the same page, that you know, people who are interested in protecting the Strait would be on the same page as the people who are pushing development of certain things or are in charge of ensuring that that the Strait remains a well-protected area.
In terms of the Strait's survival, what's the most critical danger that you see today?
You know, there's lots of things, localized type things that are going on. I think the most important thing that's going to happen in the Strait in the upcoming years is climate change. It's going to be the overriding factor, and we'll just have to see how that plays out. But there are lots of sort of local things that go on that I think people can have a real impact in ensuring that they're developed in the same way, just local development, industry, forestry, and fishing, transportation, marine traffic in the Strait is going to increase. I mean, I think the prediction is that the population around the Strait is probably going to double by the year 2050. That's not very far away. I mean, our kids will be around at that point. So that's a pretty incredible increase in population. And right now, 75% of the province, of the people in the province of British Columbia, live within, I think, 20 kilometers of the Strait. So tremendous increase in population growth, and with it comes a tremendous increase in development, in things like having to deal with sewage disposal. All those types of things have a more localized and probably more immediate impact. So they're important, and that's one place where the public can really get on board. The other, as I said, was climate change, and that is not only the Strait of Georgia. That is an issue for the whole coast as well as the world.
We're not, and when people talk about climate change, we're not just talking about it getting warmer or colder.
No.
That involves the acidity in the ocean.
Yes.
And then that of course, is critical to yeah. the species that are in there.
Absolutely. Things like acidity, things like there's places now they're finding one offshore is where the waters are getting anoxic on the bottom, so without oxygen. And those types of things are, you know, creeping up in
yeah.
various areas. And they're now being, what would we call it, considered seriously.
Yeah.
People are very concerned about what this means, what the causes are, and what we can do to mitigate it. And those types of things are probably exacerbated by other climate effects, such as what you said, warming and changes in general overall climate in the North Pacific. You know, when you get warming and changes in winds and direct wind direction and intensities, you get changes in circulation patterns in the ocean, and that impacts all of things like acidity and things like anoxia.
You mentioned a moment or two ago the startling fact, and I didn't mean to gloss it over, but it bears repeating. You said that 75% of British Columbians live within 20 kilometers of the Strait. So that's a couple, at least a couple million people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you say by 2050, that'll double?
Well, I'm saying that's what I've been led to understand when we were talking to people about this, that the projections for growth around the Strait is pretty incredible, pretty intense. So, you know, a doubling in 30 years, 35 years are the types of things we keep hearing from people.
Yeah, you just go around Vancouver, you can see that in the sort of buildings that we're seeing.
Absolutely, and just developments up around the coast.
For you, how does the Strait of Georgia define British Columbia?
For
a generation, it was the Fraser. That defined, but I mean, you really, with this book, you've touched a chord with people because we realize, those of us that have read it, just how important it is, not only to, say, our economy and our lives, but really to our identity, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, everybody who comes to British Columbia, who comes to Vancouver, Victoria, or Nanaimo, or any of these major cities, have, in some way, some sort of interaction with the Strait, whether it's landing on a float plane or flying over it when they're coming into Vancouver, driving along the coast and down on Burrard, and you come to the end, or you go to a restaurant. I mean, you're looking out over the Strait of Georgia, and so everybody has a connection to the Strait, and often you'll talk to people who have moved inland. I come from Winnipeg originally, and people would come there from BC, and the thing they missed was being near the water.
Yeah.
It was just a feeling they had. So there's that type of connection, and then there's the connection of people who actually use it for their, it's not only their livelihood, it's their life, it's their lifestyle. Loggers, fishermen, anybody out on the water, recreational people, I mean, it's huge. It's just a major part of their life. And so they have a definite connection, and we think a definite interest in ensuring that it stays in a protected, healthy condition.
And there's no place else on Earth like it, is there? I mean, in terms of the biosystem itself. I mean,
that's right. You know. It's a very unique ecosystem, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's other places equally unique in their respects, but in terms of a inland sea ecosystem, it is unique, and in, because of its diversity and its how people around BC think of it and use it, but it's quite a unique system that is for everything, for all the development that's gone on, we believe is still a very healthy system for the most part. I mean, there are certain issues in certain places that people need to work on, but for the most part, it's still a very healthy system, and I think that speaks to the resilience of the state of the Strait, and that also speaks to our need to protect that resilience.
And it must be heartening to you and Richard to have had the reception that the book has had.
Oh, absolutely. We had hoped that people would find it interesting and would, you know, we tried to make it kind of entertaining and link the system together so that people would have a real feel for how complex it is and how interconnected it is, not only itself, but to the people who live around it. And that seems to have struck a chord with people. We've had pretty good feedback from everyone we've talked to about it. So, yeah, we're very pleased with it.
And it's a gorgeous-looking book, too, isn't it?
Yes. Harper Publishing deserves a lot of credit for that. They put it together in that format, and, you know, you never really know till it comes out. And when we saw it, we were pretty happy.
Yeah. It's a book, too, that's accessible to the general public, but I'm sure that young readers will find it interesting.
Yeah, we hope so. There's a reporter asked me a couple of weeks ago about that, and one of the things we said was that, you know, we're really hoping that people as an example, teachers are in particular will use it as a resource, and because they are the ones who can really bring it to life for younger people and get them interested in it, and those are the people who are going to ensure the Strait's future.
Gordon, as I told Richard not too long ago when I spoke to him, you guys have done a great service with this book. Congratulations on it and continued good luck with it and everything else about it.
Thank you very much.
The website for more, check out harborpublishing.com, who publishes the book, and you can get information on the site, on the book, pardon me, off of their site. The book is called The Sea Among Us, The Amazing Strait of Georgia. Do pick it up. It's you'll learn a great deal from reading it, and it's a book that I suspect you'll be reading for a long time. You'll keep it either on your coffee table or on your desk, and you'll refer to it from time to time. It's a marvelous resource. Richard Beamish and Gordon McFarlane edited the book, and they contributed to it, obviously. The latter, who joined me on the line from Nanaimo, British Columbia, in Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plantum.